How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Rosebrough, Jonathan Fisk, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I've presided at dozens of weddings in the last 25 years, and sometimes people are surprised to learn what a handshake kind of thing this is for a Christian clergyman and the state. There's no registration. There's no paperwork. What happens is people come with their marriage license that they have procured from the state, from the county in which they're getting married. They bring it to the pastor. The pastor signs it. You know, the pastor doesn't really have to be qualified. You could be pastor, priest, rabbi, judge, court clerk if you're out on the high seas, ship captain. The pastor simply has to have a REV in front of his name, and he could have written that REV himself, and the state will take his signature on the marriage license as a witness to a lawful marriage. There is an Orthodox priest of some repute, Patrick Henry Reardon, in the Chicago area, who has decided as a matter of conscience and his theology of marriage that he simply cannot either require or sign Illinois marriage licenses now, that he says that would require him to redefine marriage. He's not getting out of the marriage business. He's simply not going to do the state's paperwork when it comes to marriages. His parishioners are free to do that if they want to or not. Now, this is kind of an interesting solution. How would the media cover this as they begin to cover this story? Joining us to talk about this Orthodox priest refusal to require or sign marriage license in the state of Illinois, Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Why has Father Reardon decided to do this now?
I think there's several layers to that question, so let's go ahead with the most obvious one first. The main thing is that he's in Illinois, and that he's actually in a state that, like so many of our states now, either by court action or by ballot or whatever, now has legal same-sex marriage, which means the actual definition of marriage represented in that state contract, in that state document, has changed. And that put him in the position, he felt, of cooperating with something that he considered evil. So you have the fact that he's in Illinois. In other words, if he was in Texas right now, he might have different options, you know, in a different state of the union. But he also knows that we're all watching next week as the U.S. Supreme Court begins to decide whether to take this national all at once, at which point he would argue, and a lot of other clergy would argue, that every leader of a congregation in America who does weddings is now going to face that same decision. Now, the fact that he's Orthodox in this case is important in the sense that he's a part of a church that has, you know, 2,000 years of sacramental theology attached to marriage. And that's, quite frankly, it's not that a lot of Protestant churches don't believe marriage is holy and whatever, but they're not sacramental churches with a consistent narrative of redemption in the sacraments and action of God in the sacraments. So he's got a heavier and more intense theological question handed to him, both by his tradition and, frankly, by his vows as a priest.
He has somewhat threaded the needle here. A lot of talk has been bouncing around in all kind of clergy circles of, to put it for lack of a better term, getting out of the marriage business. We're going to have to get out of the marriage business, stop solemnizing marriages. He has simply said, I'm not going to require a license or If someone puts one on my desk, I'm not going to sign it. I'm just not going to do that. But he will still marry his parishioners, marry those who approach him.
Yeah, see, I think the important thing is he's not getting out of the marriage business. What he would say is he's going to stay in the only marriage business that he can do as a priest. Do you get the distinction?
Sure.
He actually wants to stay in the marriage business. And he doesn't feel he can sign a piece of paper that doesn't represent his tradition's sacrament of marriage. So he would say he's getting out of the state document contract business in order to stay in the marriage game or business or rituals. Do you see the distinction?
Not everybody necessarily agrees with this. You actually something you've recently written. You actually quote from someone who says, you know, not so fast. What is it?
Well, I mean, I think it's simplistic to say that this is a Protestant versus liturgical situation. Hear me again. That's simplistic to say that. But I do think that congregational churches, which would be Baptist Assemblies of God, Pentecostals, megachurches, etc., I do think that congregational churches feel more comfortable saying, my congregation is doing the right thing when it does these rituals, and we know what we mean, and what we mean is the truth, and it's, you know, kind of, we're not endorsing the state, right? I think it's easier for a congregationalism-based polity to do that than for the liturgical churches who have, like I said, centuries and centuries and centuries of sacramental history. I'll go ahead and mention one other thing about the Orthodox here. And, of course, listeners, I am Eastern Orthodox. I grew up Southern Baptist, and I converted to Eastern Orthodoxy. So I'm kind of bilingual, you know, on some of this. I also think it's important to realize that the Orthodox have a long history of doing marriage in hostile environments. I mean, so you're dealing here with a tradition that this is not Orthodoxy's first rodeo on this sort of thing. When you're in a culture that is primarily defined by Sharia law in the Middle East, you've got marriage complications there as well. And when you survived the communist system, which formally separated the marriage contract at the level of the state versus what was happening in churches, you've been in some ways, this exact situation before. So the Orthodox, at that point, feel, I would say, like they have some track record here that you can back up and say, okay, we do marriage. Now, if you people were, and we are in no way, Reardon stresses that he is not casting moral judgment on members of his congregation that then go down to a judge or whatever and get the legal contract thing done. He's not judging them because he said that's a completely different moral issue, whether they seek access to a state contract on the same terms as everybody else is a completely different moral decision than a priest's decision to validate that state contract. You get the distinction?
Yeah.
So he wanted to stress, although he did raise an interesting observation, which I didn't have room for in the column, and that is, he said he could envision situations now where, say, two elderly people or two older people who are widowed or whatever, who come to him for marriage, and it may be in their economic interest not to be married in the eyes of the state, right? At which point, he said, I'm perfectly glad to seal them in the sacrament of marriage, and in the eyes of God, in the eyes of my church, in the sacraments, they're married. State of Illinois, different game. If it's in their economic interest not to be married before the state of Illinois, I'm not casting moral judgment on that either. He also told me that he could understand that there might be some people, much like you have conscientious objection in the military and whatever, there might be Christian couples who felt so strongly about this that they choose not to be validated in the eyes of the state, even if they're young, it would be in their economic interest to do so or whatever. He said, there's a statement in my column where he says, marriage has just gotten more complicated whether you want it or not. More people face more different kinds of decisions depending on where they are, you know, and what their legal financial situation is.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll take a break. When we come back, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., continue our conversation with him about an Orthodox priest's refusal to require or sign marriage licenses. We'll do Christ in the Old Testament after that with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. When we come back, how does Terry evaluate the media coverage of this story so far?
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Thursday afternoon, April the 23rd. We're talking about an Orthodox priest's refusal to require or sign marriage licenses in the state of Illinois. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org is our guest a little bit later. Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Terry, let's talk about the media coverage of this particular story. How would you evaluate it so far?
Well, it's just really getting started. There is a website called the Marriage Pledge, and as of the beginning of this past week, it had about 444 signatures on it. And you also, at First Things, the interfaith or ecumenical journal First Thing, you have a very lively debate going on with people from all kinds of different, you know, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, Evangelical, Baptist, all kinds of different perspectives. Like you said, not agreeing with one another. At Breakpoint, there was an interesting column by, is it John Stone Street? I know the last name is Stone Street, where he made the comment that he thinks it's important to realize these people are not, these people who disagree on this issue, that this is not a debate about who's being faithful to the gospel and who isn't. It's more a debate about public strategy and how best to handle public witness in this day and age. But see, I'm not even sure at that point that someone like Reardon would agree with that. I think Reardon would say he doesn't have a theological option, and thus this is for him, with his vows and his church's theology, that this is an issue of faithfulness. The simple fact of the matter is a Baptist pastor or a non-denominational pastor isn't working with the same vows and the same theology that they have to defend.
In your estimation, is the media capable of,
ooh,
of even grasping, much less accurately reporting, that it's a subtlety, but it's a very important subtlety?
Yeah. In other words, at the end of my column, I was trying to think of what statement that Ray Reardon said that I could use as a wrap-up. Because I was anticipating which direction the press coverage might go. And Reardon stressed at the end, I'm not making a political statement. I'm making a theological statement. You should always remember, as you and I have discussed many times, that for many people in the press, politics is the only reality. Politics is the only thing that affects real life in the real world. So thus, if a priest does this, he had to have done it for political reasons, right? What else is there? So if it's covered as much like the debacle we saw in the Indiana coverage, if this is covered simply as a gay-hating political statement by a, you know, radical priest, they've missed what the man's arguing in the first place. Now, I'm watching the Chicago Tribune at this point. At some point, I assume that what he's done will get written about locally. I also, just this morning, received a private note from another group of priests who are beginning to circulate a similar petition, kind of on the liturgical side. And as always, you have to watch the Roman Catholic Church, the biggest game in town. Let me turn this question around. How serious do you think this would be for Missouri Synod Lutherans?
We're still kind of, I mean, I don't want to say sitting on the fence, still trying to decide. And I think the big confusion is precisely what you pointed out before, Terry, and that is we have to distinguish public strategy, making political statements, which is certainly fine if you want to make political statements, and our understanding of the pastor and the congregation's role in solemnizing marriage and what marriage is. We don't have to hold a sacramental view of it, but I can very easily imagine a good stalwart Lutheran pastor of my ilk saying, you know, I like Reardon's solution. I still want to have pastoral care over the marriages of my people, but I can't sign those documents anymore. I could see a lot of guys going for that, tell you the truth.
And frankly, also, couldn't you see a Missouri Synod pastor reaching that decision in, say, Massachusetts or New York quicker than they would reach it in Texas or Oklahoma or Arkansas or something?
Sure.
I mean, I heard from somebody else who made an interesting comment that in the state of Texas, apparently the couple doesn't even have to cooperate with the state so much. They just simply file a form that says a marriage has taken place. If you have any question about this, contact my church. In other words, it's in some ways it's not even acknowledging the state other than to say the state of Texas has agreed that if religious traditions have done a marriage, the state then will say, okay, we salute that, which removes the couple even one stage further. So the couple doesn't have to go down and go through a state ritual. They just have to file a piece of paper that says, hey, we got married. And if you have any question, go check this.
I was speaking recently with a Canadian pastor, and this maybe is another wrinkle here. They're way ahead of us on this kind of stuff, but they're also hemmed in a little bit, Terry. In the United States, if all you got to do is hang out a shingle that says REV, and
yeah,
you can
right.
sign marriage. You don't even have to do that, and you can sign a marriage license. In Canada, they have to fill out paperwork and be registered with the state to sign those documents. And that's an entirely different kind of thing. But I'm wondering about the backlash against a Reardon strategy where the state might say, now, wait a minute, not so fast, Pastor. Maybe we should start registering our clergy to do this stuff.
Well, then you've created a different country. But at the same time, why should the state care what he does inside the doors of his church? He's not granting tax status. He's not changing anything legal in the eyes of the state. What's happening at his altar is between him and God and the angels, as far as he's concerned. And he's not making any claim to have affected the actions of the state. That's a laity decision from his perspective. He's just in charge of sacraments. I don't even know how the state would even know. So that might affect the Texas option you're talking about. But it doesn't affect Pat. It doesn't affect Father Pat. He doesn't care what the state thinks about that at that point. I mean, do you really envision a day when they're going to shut churches down? I don't even see the HHS regulations trying to do that, you know, on some of these issues. They're trying to leave the church alone. It's when you start interacting with the public that the government is now getting nervous, both with gay rights and with the Health and Human Services regulations and stuff. Now, back to your question about the press. I think another statement you have to make is that a story isn't real until it affects the Catholic Church for many editors. They really don't care. I remember years ago, back in the 80s, when I was working at the Charlotte Observer. You know, in the Charlotte Observer, the major street in town, one of the major streets is Billy Graham Boulevard. I mean, you got Southern religion in Charlotte. And at that time, the Roman Catholic Church, the Diocese of Charlotte, was the smallest in the United States. But almost all of my editors were from other parts of the country. As a part of a newspaper chain. They were from St. Louis and Chicago and whatever. And just about any story I wanted to pitch that had anything to do with Catholicism, they thought it was a big deal and should go on page one, especially if it was controversial. And yet I could pitch them stories about the Southern Baptist Convention that had national implications because of how prominent Southern Baptist life was in Charlotte and in that part of the world. And they weren't interested because they didn't care about Southern Baptists. All that mattered to them was Catholicism, because in the big cities of the Northeast and the Midwest and whatever, that was the biggest game in town. Even though they were in Charlotte, North Carolina, they didn't give a flip about what was happening in Charlotte, North Carolina that much. So to some degree, we may not know what's going to happen with the press coverage of this event until this thing gets addressed in Catholicism. Let's put it this way. Let me give you a marker on this. If this topic comes up among Catholic clergy at the March for Marriage this week, this coming weekend, and if there are Catholic clergy or a few bishops who say, we're going to bring this up next year in Philadelphia when the Pope is there, when the Pope is in town, I guess not next year, it's just a season away because it's going to affect the NFL football schedule. When the Pope is in town, we intend to bring this up and ask him what we should do about this. Do you think that's going to be on A1?
How inevitable is that, Terry? Because
I don't know.
I mean, the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, they share a sacramental view of marriage. I can very easily see bishops saying, I like the way that Father Reardon's thinking here.
But at the same time, in a state like Massachusetts, the liberal wing of the Catholic Church may as well almost be the established state church. And even though they have split over situations like they've shut down their adoption agency because they refuse to cooperate with same-sex marriage on adoption, same-sex couples on adoption, I don't know how the Roman Catholic hierarchy would respond at this point. At this point in the United States, I think it's safe to say that when it comes to statements of moral courage in the public square, the Roman Catholic Church in America is currently functioning as two different churches with two different strategies, and that the tensions are just right there for everybody to see.
If the media covered this story, if the Chicago Tribune wrote a story today, speculate, how would it probably read at this point? What would be missing?
I won't know till I see it. Reardon is a very articulate and blunt man. I would say he's a guy that's very, it's hard to misquote this man. He has lots of experience as a writer. He's a very popular podcaster in alternative Orthodox media. I mean, you know, good grief, his name is Patrick Henry Reardon. I mean, he's a bold guy. I'm really not going to pass judgment. If it's covered by the Religion Reporter, I think he's got a shot to get the actual content of his views into print, at which point people can then argue and debate them, as they should. If this thing is covered by on a political side of things, all bets are off.
How is it going to read that way?
I told you before. You know, in an anti-gay move, a priest has decided, blah, blah, blah. It will be stated as a political judgment and nigh unto bigotry, because obviously on the political side of the fence at this point, hardly anybody is daring to even criticize the direct equation of DNA and race with sexual orientation. I believe it was Rod Dreher, might have been Molly, and it might have been both, might have been Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, and it might have been both, who simply said, what we saw in Indiana at the level of the press was nothing short of holy war. And I've been at this a long time, and this is really saying something. I don't know if I've ever seen a story in the mainstream press covered as consistently and poorly as the story in Indiana. And that's just even quoting, that's quoting the viewpoints of anybody involved in the debate. There were at least three or four distinctly different points of view in that debate. And other than the, this was an anti-gay piece of legislation, other than that perspective, nobody got quoted accurately or fairly. Not the pro-RFRA left, not the pro-RFRA right, basically just nobody. It was holy war at the level of the headlines. So what happens in Illinois? What happens to ministers who attempt to make this distinction? I'm not sure, but my main prediction would be it will depend on whether it's covered as a religion story or a political story.
Finally then, Terry, do you care to speculate on what the Supreme Court is going to do here?
Well, if it's a 5-4 vote with Kennedy, I don't know how far Kennedy will go. I will say this. There are at least two liberals on the Supreme Court, and I won't name names, who seem to be honest-to-goodness First Amendment liberals. And it could be that we end up with some sort of conscientious objector status recognized, and that they don't go all the way to the mystery of sexual orientation equals the DNA of race, and thus we have a direct correlation to the famous Bob Jones versus U.S. case, where the Supreme Court said Bob Jones University had bad theology that the state couldn't recognize when it banned interracial dating, and thus they lose their tax exemption. I don't know if that domino falls. I got a sneaking suspicion the Chief Justice has been saving up some chips for something. But as you and I have talked about before, we all live in Justice Kennedy's America. He's the king. He just lets us stay here. And it's all up to him if it's a 5-4 vote.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you.
Glad to do it.
When we come back on this Thursday afternoon, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We're going to go into a very strange story. He'll have to tell us this story. In Genesis chapter 31, talk about the God of Bethel, Christ in the Old Testament. Stay tuned. Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Oh Lord.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
At Zion Lutheran Church, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, we've adopted the motto, "A Changeless Christ for a Changing World." While many congregations try to market a message that appeals to what a changing world wants, we continue to give a constantly changing world what it needs. A changeless Christ in word and sacraments like the church has done for 2,000 years. If you're in Chippewa Falls and would like to have the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, and salvation that Jesus won on the cross and delivers today in his church, please join us poor, miserable sinners. For more information, visit cfzionlutheran.com.